representando la excitante nueva música.
Welcome to Group Therapy with the LFC Day Trippers. Right, we're back into therapy session, I believe. What can we say? We've been on a roller coaster ride, I suppose, since Klopp's taken over, and it continues on that way. What can you say after that defeat to United? It was horrific, let's be honest about it. And then to add insult to injury, Mignolet gets a 5.5-year contract and signs it today, just so we can all sort of wallow in our happiness at some good news coming out of the club. Right, tonight we've Paul Brennan, we've Dave Thomas and we've Andy Young in here to go through the bones of the defeat against United. Have a brief look at what's going on or what isn't really going on in the transfer window, and of course discuss that new contract for Simon Mignolet, our Belgian keeper, our mighty keeper, the man who himself is known as the Belgian Count Dracula. Right, chance. So let's start. First pod back in the new year, and another great win for us to talk about. So, where do we start with this one? Dave, good to have you back. Andy, good to have you back. Paul, good to have you back.
Good to have you back, Phil.
Thanks, buddies. But let's start. Let's be honest about this. Had we won yesterday, and given the performance that we put in the first half, let's be honest about it, people would have been raving about how this team is starting to improve, and that that we're going the right direction and we were closing in on a top four spot. So before we get into the abjectness of that defeat and the subsequent announcement this evening of Mignolet's new 5.5-year contract, there are a lot of good signs, aren't there, Dave?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I actually think it was Andy who tweeted it yesterday, saying, like, you know, if one of those chances goes in and we win 1-0 rather than lose 1-0, we are having a very different conversation today. Because we were in amongst them. We did play very well. We did create chances. The problems we've got are the problems we've had for 18 months now, right? Which is we don't have anyone who can reliably score, and we're inconsistent defensively, particularly from set pieces. I mean, it's worth remembering we've conceded 2 goals directly from corners. So just conceding from a rebound on a corner is probably an improvement, to be fair. But I actually think we did like 80% good stuff. Mm. You know, it's just we lack conviction in the final third, and we lack conviction in our penalty box when the ball is in the air for some reason. Well, loads of reasons, but that's why. But I was watching a game. I mean, you do get that feeling when you're watching it going, we haven't scored. Fucking hell. You know, it's sucker. Nah. I think you actually during the game were like, we're totally dominant. We've, you know, we should be 3-0 up. Cue us conceded a ridiculous goal. And like 10 minutes later, we conceded a ridiculous goal. So, I mean, loads of people are angry. Loads of people are furious. I'm not, because I can see what Klopp's trying to do, right? And if he has Origi, or if he has Sturridge, or he has a better striker, or if Lallana can score, or if fucking Henderson stops shooting from 55 yards out, then we win that game. We were the better side. And sometimes you get a sucker punch like that.
Andy,
my final thing I'd say is, you know, people are talking about, oh, the worst United team in, you know, 50 years or whatever to come to Anfield. Yeah, but we beat them at Old Trafford when Danny Murphy scored like 3 goals in a row, and we were shocking. Mm-hmm. So results like that happen. Mm-hmm. You don't always win being a better team.
Andy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
What did you take over? It positively wise.
Yeah, it was just like Dave saying at the start of a tweet, like, it wasn't just the case where if we won, you know, people would be saying, oh, that's a good performance, like, as a policy, the way we are now. Like, well, not me personally, but a lot of people are giving out fucking yards. The gulf, the difference between it would be had we had a, come two chances away, it would have went from being shit, Lallana's fucking this, fucking Milner crap, fucking Mingley's this, fucking, to, oh, we were fucking brilliant. We wouldn't have gone on how brilliant we were, because we didn't give them a sniff all day. We isolated Rooney completely. Like, Lucas battered Fellaini. Like, you know, there was lots of really good things. It was just in the final third. And it's not really unexpected, considering none of, nobody in that side has goals in them.
Mm.
Nobody. Firmino got two, like, on Wednesday, but it took him half the season, more than half the season, to come up with two goals. So, it's hardly a surprise. The performance was very good at times, was excellent at times, but just when it came to chances, like when Henderson got flashing across, and a chance when where, I'm not sure whether it was on target even, but De Gea gets a leg on it. They have to be on target. Milner gets that long ball across the top and he kind of decides to shoot rather than take it down and just take a look up. Or, you know, these are efforts. These are chances where you find your players in, you know, you expect to at least get a shot on target or make the keeper work.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, De Gea got man of the match. I don't really know how. Like, it's not like he was pulling worldies off.
Mm.
Didn't make him work. Didn't make him dive into the corners.
Mm.
He pulled off one kind of
save
where it was oh, but realistically, if Miguel lets that in, we are absolutely slaughtering him. So we need to be having a lot more conviction. And like, I mean, I think Henderson's a great player and his finishing has come on. He's only come back from injury, so we leave it. But that one that came across him.
Mm-hmm. And he's
like, a player like him now at this stage shouldn't be thinking, oh yeah, just make sure I get contact on this ball. Because that's all he did.
Yeah.
He puts a side foot onto it.
Gotta
to make sure he gets contact on it. Like, that's the ball that comes across to Gerrard against Olympiacos.
Mm.
And he's not even thinking of getting contact in the ball. He's thinking of smashing that fucking ball through the net and into the cup. And Henderson sort of just, you know. So players need, like him, he's a captain, need to start taking responsibility. And there's definitely better in them. I'm sure, like, the likes of Chan, like, with all the ability he has of smashing goals in on the training and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You need to start taking responsibility on the pitch.
Yeah.
And, to sympathise with Klopp, and you know, there wasn't very much, like, his hands are tied, like, he's no striker. I mean, play Benteke, he can't do with the team what he wants to do. So at the moment he's just hoping that a bit of luck falls, we get a few breaks, but you know, but I mean,
if we'd won 1-0 instead of lost 1-0, right, then everything else was exactly the same. Nobody'd be saying it was a smash and grab from us.
No.
The way they're saying it about
they'd
United.
Be really saying,
so that will tell you about the performance. If we'd won 1-0, everyone would have said that was a really good performance. The fact that they won 1-0, everyone's going, fucking hell, how the hell did they win that?
Paul, it does show that we're sort of like shocking mentally, though. The fact that, you know, like, United, what, that was the only chance they had, the only remote chance they had, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So they're like, Martial kind of got through in the first half and Sacco blocked him. That was about it, really, though. I can remember.
Well, Steve-O tweeted a great stat earlier, which is that of the last, like, 13 teams to play Liverpool, 9 of them scored on it with their first shot on target or something stupid.
It's 17 all season. It's ridiculous. It's completely ridiculous. And it's the same story against them. The same story against Arsenal, really, where, like, they were really struggling to kind of hold us, like, to deal with us in the first half of that game. And they still scored two absolutely nothing goals that we gifted them. So it's more of a mentality thing, really, I think, than a performance thing. Because we fell away in the second half against Arsenal, but we did well to come back. Like, so, on the whole, that was a decent performance.
But at least,
and against United was fairly solid as well. Apart
against
from
Arsenal
fucking,
and United, though, you know, this is where I'm more positive. For like a year under Rodgers, apart from that bit where we went three at the back and it looked like we had a bit of a plan, we didn't have a plan. We didn't know what we were trying. Like, you know, we used to come on here and go, how are we trying to score? What the fuck are we doing here to try and score? Whereas you can see what Klopp wants to do to try and score. Win the ball back high, break in numbers and make smart decisions. The problem he's got is the players are making stupid decisions.
Mm.
It's not like we're not creating. We have more possession. We're more touches in their final third. But it's like Andy says, you know, the ball comes across to Henderson. He's used to having Lewandowski or Royce or Götze or these players who know exactly what to do in those decisions, in those situations. Whereas we just don't have those players. We don't have those players that are mentally strong enough. And I think, to Paul's point, that's the issue. I think, again, Paul tweeted when Lallana missed the chance. I think you said the most frustrating thing about it is there was never a moment where you thought he was going to score.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, oh my God, how did he miss that? It's like, of course he missed that.
Like, I'm not even saying that it's an easy chance. It's just a chance that, like, a lot of players would score from. Like, a lot of top players would. Yeah. Whereas it dropped to Lallana and you could just say, like, I never had confidence that he was going to do anything with conviction, and he ends up just kind of sticking his nut on it.
Okay, really. Look, let's be honest about this. The key problems we have are in our own third and in the final third of the pitch. We're either conceding stupid goals or we're not scoring. Andy, you touched on it there. When you looked at essentially the attackers for yesterday in Falmer, Lallana and fucking Firmino, right? It didn't scream goals, did it?
Well, like I said, there was no one in the team. Let alone, like
you're reliant. You're
three players up front, there's not goals in it. There's no goals behind them in Lucas, Henderson and Chan. There's no goals from Cloyne and Moreno. There's no goals from Sacco, Arturi from set pieces. There's no goals. There is no goals.
No goals.
And, like, you can't even criticise Klopp because there's no goals on the bench.
Yeah.
There's no goals in Melwood.
I think Lallana and Ibe have, like, something stupid, like, you know, 50 appearances and 0 goals this season in the league. Like, that's your number one choice forward and the number one backup to your first choice forward. You know, there's no goals.
So how do you fix it?
Sign a striker.
No, like, that's
well, you get Sturridge or Origi back. I mean, we are missing 3 strikers. Sturridge, Origi, Innings, all of whom, looking at the way Klopp has said that up, would play ahead of Benteke, right? And probably ahead of Firmino.
I think the tea lady will play ahead of Benteke.
So suddenly you put Sturridge in. Let's say Sturridge, for argument's sake. You put Sturridge in there. Suddenly Firmino goes one side and maybe Coutinho goes the other side. Suddenly that's a different front three than Firmino, who's still finding his feet. But they've got to, I mean, I think he's got to go out in the window and sign an attacker. Not necessarily a striker, but an attacker that's gonna contribute goals. We haven't had a killer striker or he's got to throw his weight behind Benteke and say, we're going to build a team around and get, because Benteke is a 20 goal a season striker in the right system. So you've got
to see. Yeah, I'd be more prepared to write the season off than for him to start playing to Benteke's strengths.
Yeah, that's not where you fix it. That's what I'm saying.
If there's a game where you feel Benteke style of football is going to win us the game, and that's what he believes as the manager, and I used to see it with Benitez a lot, like, depending on the opposition, they could be completely different setup or approach to the game, then fair enough. But if he wants to drill an idea into these players and get everybody used to watching Liverpool like that, as in, like, the kids coming up and everything else, and creating the culture how he wants to play football and all that, you can't just waste there's 4 months left in the season. So I'd say his mind is already made up about Benteke. I'd say he's gone. It's probably 1 week, maybe claw back 20 million, whatever. Someone would be taking off to buy him, I'm sure.
I mean, Benteke is fifth choice.
Yeah.
You know,
so
Kalker
plays ahead.
He'd be fifth.
That was the interesting bit. We brought Benteke on to be the big man, realised that he can't be the big man, so we bring Kalker on instead. So,
you know, you see a lot of people just making mad shit. Play the kids and blah, blah, blah. No, he can't. He has to. Look, some of these players are going to survive the summer and be playing next season. He's not going to just. It's impossible to sell so many players. It's just not feasible. Like, you just cannot do all that business and bring in enough replacements. It doesn't work like that, especially with the Euros as well coming up. Players are going to be concentrating and going away to play with their countries, and then when they come back, they're going to be coming back late. So this idea of buying 5-6 starters is just not going to happen. Just not going to happen. So we have to stomach the fact that Mega is going to be around for another while. Lallana probably will be, you know, and
last thing we need is another summer where we sign 6-7 players.
Well, I'll tell you, but the problem we have there is that we can't afford not to change that squad, because, like, you've got shy horses like fucking Lallana there, you've got Milner.
Phil, you're talking bollocks.
No, I'm not talking bollocks, Dave. Dave, what does he bring? He brings nothing. He doesn't bring assists, he doesn't bring goals, he's an attacking midfielder who doesn't contribute anything in the attack apart from running around and doing Cruyff turns into players.
Well, that's not true.
It is true.
His final ball is not
cabbage.
right?
As an attacking midfielder.
But that's not to say he doesn't offer anything. That's stupid. Because he clearly offers things. He knits the play together. He is...
not having.
Fits into Klopp's... Okay, so Jurgen Klopp, your favourite manager of all time, plays him in every game. You're saying he's an idiot then?
Well, who else is he going
to
play?
Well, that's not necessarily true. I mean, he's played Lallana when he hasn't had to.
I know, yeah. Like, if I don't agree with the decision.
Yeah.
So he's not shit. He might not be who you like, and he isn't doing enough in the final third. I think everyone would agree with that. Yeah. My point is actually... You wouldn't sell Lallana, just buy someone better so that Lallana comes in the alternate games. Lallana, you know, doesn't have to play every week in the league. So I agree with your argument that Lallana shouldn't be starting in the front three. But if anyone's fit, I don't think he does start in the front three.
Klopp has said that he's watched, like, he had a little look at Lallana when he played the season with Southampton, and he's seen goals and assists out of him. So he knows it's in there somewhere. What he is getting out of him is all the work rate that's required to play in the team. And he does keep the ball. He doesn't lose the ball. I know, like, he might take an extra touch, but he's a very safe option to play the ball into.
Safe is not what we need. We need goals.
Listen, I know that. I know that. But you can see why Klopp is playing him. If Lallana could be accommodated in a team with more goals.
I agree.
It's when you have Lallana and Firmino and Milner and Jan and Henderson and Allen and...
Well, look, I understand why he's playing, because he offers more than Oibe, who I think is the biggest one-trick pony I've seen in a long, long time. He hasn't progressed as a player at all since he came into the team.
Well, he has.
All he does is he goes down the line, cuts inside. He's like a clone of Glenn Johnson playing on the wing.
he's better this season than he was last season. So he's
it's the exact
come
same.
On. Nah, bollocks.
Well, I have to say, I have seen enough of Oibe now to make me mind up on him. He's never going to cut out of Liverpool.
No, he's not.
Cocking the fucking block. He's never going to cut out of Liverpool. He's not even a good enough squad player.
No.
I think he could be a squad player, but I don't think there's room for him and Lallana to both be squad players. I think you'd have to get rid of one of them. Because I don't think Lallana is ever going to be good enough to start for us. Like, he is a player where if you have loads of good players, you can keep him as a squad option. Like, But like not the two of them.
Isn't he 20 years old?
Yeah.
You're all talking shite.
No.
You can tell with players.
He's taking his time. For a big enough lad, he took his time to get in. To, you know, he was physically capable of coming into that team a lot longer before he did. He kind of got back because we needed a player last year in January. He came back. He's not a player that lit up the fucking... the youth system. He wasn't scoring millions and millions of goals. Like, this isn't a prodigy we're talking about.
But other than decision making, what's he missing? In his game. But he'll learn that.
Ability. Like, I mean,
I don't think he is.
Look,
he can use both feet. He's quick. He's a good passer of the ball.
For a player who wants to skip the past his man all the time, he shows the ball to them.
And but I don't even think
you know what he's doing. He shows him enough of the ball so the player commits, and then he gets a ball.
But I think he's so easy to defend against. Like, when I don't even think he wants to skip by players. He wants to draw them in and then try cut past them. He just wants to cut inside all the time. Whether he's playing the left or the right, all he wants to do is cut inside. You could see it yesterday. There was so many times he went down the byline, attacked it, and then cut back inside. And all the defender is doing is just waiting for him to cut back inside and just nicks the ball away from him. That's why he's so easy to defend.
In his defence, though, it's not the sort of season where, like, you want to be throwing in a 20-year-old to try and win you the game. Like, our squad is in bits, like, with injuries and just the shite window that we had. Like, I don't think it's ideal to have a 20-year-old, please go on and try and magic something out and win the game for us.
There's been games in the Europa League when he was the best player on the field. I'm not saying he's going to develop into, like, John Barnes. He's a professional footballer. It's too early to write.
He's
him
made
off.
It this far. He's obviously got a bit of ability about him.
I wouldn't be. Well.
I'm not saying he's fucking shit, but he's not. He's just not going
to
cut it.
How much does it cost to replace Jordan Ibe, though? Like, you know, if you're going in your summer budget, how much does it cost?
I think it's soon to have Markovic now as Klopp's go-to man for playing with, bringing him off the bench or even starting him. Based on the fact that he's a better player.
I don't think what he's done. I like Markovic. I'd have them both. But what's Markovic done in the Liverpool squad to make you think that he's better than I?
How old is Markovic?
Same age as I, right?
Okay, so he's nailed down a starting place in the Benfica team for a couple of seasons before he even joined Liverpool. Mm-hmm. And he was recognised as one of their best players, according to Benfica fans. I can't say I watch Benfica. So he was ripping it up in that league.
I think he's got 6 goals in 2 years, but yeah.
He was the stats now,
aren't
you?
Okay. Steve was on the phone.
Look, I agree. I like Markovic. Yeah. I'm not arguing with Markovic as a good player.
He was obviously.
I just don't know how you can write Knabe off without.
He was obviously contributing in that league more than I was contributing in the Premier League. He was.
It's an easier league.
Otherwise, scouts wouldn't go over and say, yeah, let's spend 25 million.
You don't think the Portuguese league is an easier league than the English league?
At what point did I say that was true?
You just said that.
I just came out here and said,
You said, Markovic was tearing it up in the Portuguese league and Ibe has done nothing in the English league. And I said, it's an easier league. And you went, no, it's not.
Rewind that back to me.
The listeners will hear it. The truth will prevail.
Well, look, I actually think...
I obviously wasn't
listening.
Oh, that's
Phil Edmondson.
Obviously, yeah.
Yeah.
No,
let me take the Markovic point
because it also feeds back to the Lallana point, right? We're talking... You've just said it. Our squad is decimated. When you looked at the bench yesterday and you say you want to change something around, there's nothing to change something around on the pitch, right? So we have... Klopp has already recalled a load of loan players because the squad is so threadbare at this stage. There is a lot of logic in trying to do a deal with Fenerbahce to bring Markovic back, because the one thing he has got, he's got straight leg pace that will get him up and down the pitch. When you look at Fallner on the left hand side, he just doesn't have any pace. He doesn't have anything about him. He has no centre of gravity. He falls over.
Is Fallner Lallana or Milner?
Lallana still has his own name.
Okay,
but just about. But like, he's just awful. He contributes nothing. Nothing in the final third of the pitch. I cannot deal with him. I cannot deal with his fucking agricultural forehead and the fact that he has no centre of gravity. He just basically falls fucking over and he gives the ball away.
If you think if fucking Markovic and Ibe had a life swap and Ibe went over to the Portuguese league, he'd be the best player in the league or one of the best players in the league.
I have no idea. But Markovic isn't one of the best players in the Turkish league. The Portuguese league.
Yeah.
I think I would do as well as Markovic did.
All right, fair enough, yeah.
Six goals in 2 goals.
Would you think we would be better equipped with...
I'm not saying Ibe's going to make it. I'm saying I think it's early to say he definitely won't.
But Dave, I want to know, right? If you could bring Markovic back off loan, would you do it?
Yeah.
Yeah, Grant Ibe would as well.
And like Andy said,
I'm not writing Markovic off. I'm not even saying he's worse than Ibe. I'm saying it's too early to write Ibe off.
When you look at the attacking options we had yesterday, either the three that started or who was on the bench, we increase our options by bringing Markovic back off loan because we literally are down threadbare at this stage.
You
could write the season off and let the players like that fight it out. Like you have a free half a season there. Then you don't have to go into the summer and kind of try and pick and choose who you want to keep. You can play Ibe in games. You can play Markovic in games.
The only thing about Markovic is, he's a bit lackadaisical. I wonder would he put the work in that Klopp would want from one of his forward players.
Well, I don't think there was ever a doubt. Like when he was he played left wing back for Rodgers and right wing back. He always did work his balls off.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't seen enough of him now to I would bring him back if only because I'd like to see what he obviously had a lot of talent and I'd like to see what Klopp would be able to do with him. And we need more options. So yeah. Mm. I mean, I was excited when we brought Ryan Kent back. I'd love to, give him a go.
I
don't know how Teixeira doesn't get more of a chance.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't understand why he's on the bench all the time.
Serious borrow time now. He's
28.
He's the same age as us. He is.
But right, okay, so look, as you said, there are wholesale issues up top in terms of scoring goals and our choices that we have because it's limited. Looking at midfield, we mentioned it, John is doing is his role in terms of trying to you can see him trying to drive the play, and at times he takes the wrong options, but he is a young player, and to be honest with you, for me, I don't know if you agree or disagree, he's probably been the most consistent of our players over the Christmas period.
Yeah,
in terms of putting in a performance, and you can say he's there between 6 and 8 out of 10 in terms of the games that he's playing. Emre Can. Hendo, I thought was a bit quiet at the weekend. I know he was getting the chances, but he just...
Emre Can is one of the... I think he's been amazing. But it's like, I actually think, it's almost like people don't want to give him the credit because so many people like... It's weird. Like, he's like a bit like Sako.
Yeah, I think in that case, and I feel the same about it myself, you're kind of just being led by the Twitter...
Maybe, yeah. Maybe in the ground.
I mean,
if you sit there with your mates
that are fans, or you go to a game, or you're in the pool, or whatever, you tend to meet a different type of fan.
But even the journalists, though, you see the player ratings after the game or the comments on, he never I just think if Jordan, if Jordan Henderson had the game that Emery
the Jordans
Shannon
have a heavy influence in, because pretty much anyone who's prominent and has a big opinion on Twitter is a wannabe journalist.
Well, they're all wankers.
They all want it. They're even worse than journalists. Like, they want to be journalists.
Yeah. No, no, no. But my point is,
going around with iPhones and fucking car windows.
Talking to Emre Can, doing news in brief.
Can't be carrying on like that. It's
fucking ridiculous.
Fucking ridiculous. You need to be tied up.
Yeah. And shot.
/blog.
But the point is, I think if Jordan Henderson was having the games, or Lucas was having the games that Emre Can was having, I think more people would be looking to get selfies with him through a car window. Like, do you know what I mean?
I know. And look, fairness, look,
I thought he was excellent. I thought he was very good.
I thought our midfield was quite decent yesterday. When you talk about doing the midfield job, what are we doing?
Lucas was deadly.
Yeah.
When he fucking low Fellaini in the face. and then he put it up to him loads. Yeah. He won every fucking single header against Fellaini.
It's such a pity that he dirtied his bib by losing Rooney for the corner. Like, he never had to get involved in the initial Fellaini header.
Fucking Mignolet for that goal.
I don't think, as we're saying, the middle toward yesterday wasn't an issue, and we started to dominate that whole area of the pitch because we were able to take the ball off, you know, whenever we wanted.
Yeah.
We were able to construct attacks. We just couldn't put the ball in. And then when they were breaking against us, it was being broken up all the time.
Saka and Touré were brilliant again. Saka was a bit shaky against Arsenal, but Touré, two quality games from a fucking grand island.
Yeah. Seriously.
Yeah. You know? Very good. Defensively, we were very good. Fullbacks were good as well.
And he's faster than Rooney, Touré.
Actually, do you know what? And for someone who's absolutely riddled with archery, isn't he quick? Like, I watched him against Arsenal, and Jesus, like, he reads that game so well. Yeah. Like, you know, and a real like role model in the defence.
Mm. I mean, you'd wish he was 5 years younger, because him and Sarko together would actually
would be a good partnership.
Excellent. No. Like, if he had the yard of pace, he'd actually be.
Sarko has this mad thing, like, he started doing a lot lately, the way he takes that ball down on his chest.
Yeah.
He just arches his back like nearly 45 degrees, and the ball just each time, like, just springs right down onto his feet. Mm. Brilliant.
Yeah.
So, the defence, the way they dealt with the United threat, which I suppose was Rooney and Martial all day, was quite
and you know, United were out to spoil the game as well, like Schneiderlin and Fellaini sitting deep, like, so the midfield did well, but like, coming up against that shite, like,
the one thing I will say is United approached the game like one of the shite sides that comes to Anfield and just decided to back
they
up
were
and
exactly
wait for that chance.
Norwich when they came to Anfield last year, you know, like, the sour shit that, like, you feel like, you know, we're never going to score today, and you're fucking knocking the door down the whole time, and then they get one chance and score.
I think that's the last, I mean, again, you know, if you look at it on the positive side, I think that's the bit the Klopp still has to work out, is at home when a team comes and doesn't want to play. I mean, our away form is really good, our cup form is really good. I think when we play against teams that want to play football against us, we're pretty good. What he hasn't mastered, and it's going to take him time, and he hasn't got the personnel to do it, because you've got to take those chances, is if a team comes and just doesn't, United didn't want to play, didn't want the ball. Like, you know, so it's hard then if you haven't got a striker that's going to do what Rooney did, which is you get a chance, you score.
Yeah.
You know, if we score a goal, it's a different game.
Let's talk about the goal, because, like, you know, there's a litany of mistakes that goes on from, I'm not copping that they're taking a short corner, even though they were talking to each other for about 45 minutes at the corner flag. Yeah. The ball comes in. Look, you know, on that one, I find it hard to give Sacco real criticism. In terms, he goes up, he challenges for Fellaini. Fellaini wins the header. That's going to happen on corners and crosses all the time. But then after that, we are so slow to react. And even when the ball comes off the post, we talked about Mignolet goes down on his knees for absolutely no reason whatsoever. Whatever about I'm not talking about finish. I'm just talking about I don't know what he's doing going down on his knees, because it opens up the goal for Rooney to hit it.
Yeah.
Right. But, like, when that ball comes off the post, there's, like, I remember watching it going, weren't there players reacting to that ball coming off the post? It's like they stopped and United kept reacting to the ball, and it allowed, because if I know Lucas loses Rooney in the corner and he's marking him, but if if our defenders are just more awake and more on their toes, there's a good chance you can get a block in, or you close Rooney down so he doesn't have such a long time to actually wait for the ball to bounce up and smack it the way he does. That to me was my biggest issue with the goal.
Well, and credit to Rooney, he kind of hit that ball while it was still very high.
Oh yeah, yeah.
How he got his foot kind of over the ball. That's one of those who have failed to any single one of our players. It's not just going over. It's going over. Yeah. You know, it's
leaving the stadium.
The biggest disappointing thing about that for me was, like, it was the first corner, you know, you had lots of corners, was the first one that actually went past the front post. Like, you're kind of clearing them easy enough, but it's the first one, and lo and behold, Fellaini gets his head in it, and I understand he's a big lad and he's bound to win a header if it's near him, but Jesus, totally unchallenged. He's about like 3 foot above anyone else winning that. He gets a full forehead on it and no one's nudging him. Like, he's coming through and Henderson hasn't even got a hold of his jersey, or he's not even touched tight to him. And then, okay, the defender should be very aware of it, and he can see that Henderson isn't a bit close to him. Jump into him. Do something. Nudge him. It's a fair challenge to be. You don't have to win the header. You just have to make sure he doesn't get such a header. I mean, he gets a perfect looping header.
But why, against him at Old Trafford, we tried something. Was it someone like Klein or Moreno? Some little midget like was right beside Fellaini, and his job was just like
to block him.
And Skirtle had his eye on Fellaini, so if he got past him, then Skirtle was going to challenge him or whatever. It was something like that. Whereas this time it was just like, let's fucking feed Henderson to the dog here. Let's hope we can stop him.
We're not aggressive enough in our own box. Andy's right. Like, it's not about beating Fellaini in the air. It's about making sure he can't jump that high, or making sure he doesn't get a run on it, or reacting down, you know, throw yourself in front of Rooney's shot. But for me, it all stems from the goalkeeper, which is, they know he's not coming. It's a psychological thing. They know it doesn't matter where the corner's going, he's not coming, right? And then I think you're always going, fuck, you know, we have to deal with this. And then Sacco and Torre both went for with Fellaini. Torre in his back, Sacco in his front. And actually what Torre should have done is give him a little nudge and push and dropped off. So that Fellaini doesn't get the head there and he drops off onto Rooney. But we're conceding so frequently from set pieces. There's got to be something systemic in there, you know? I think Paul Tompkins did a good article about how we haven't got a lot of height in the side, you know, and Touré actually isn't that tall for a centre-back, you know. Fullbacks are really short, the midfield is relatively short, you know, and we didn't have Benteke or someone like that, you know, to be another big guy in there. So it could be something in that we're physically not there, but we're just not, we're too passive on set plays, way too passive.
That's the thing I was kind of getting at when I said, like, it's more, like, it's not performances that are fucking us here, it's the mentality. Yeah, like, it is. As soon as Fellaini got his head on that, every one of our players just went, oh, bollocks. Yep. Not, oh, how do I react to this? What happens if it drops? They just
forward
went,
them around them.
Yeah, they all, and every one of them just went, oh, bollocks. And there was someone, I don't know who it was, about, like, you know, just a few yards behind Rooney marking someone, and they kind of saw the header going and just kind of froze and went, oh, bollocks. Instead of saying, like, I'll get back, maybe it'll come back and I can fucking, like, I can get a block.
It is one of those things. It's like when you're standing there at a counter and you drop a cup. Like, you always just freeze and watch it fall. And you might stick a foot out to kind of catch on your toe or whatever, something like that. But that's just what happens. When something like that happens, it's too late. He's up and he's won the header. What can you do? What can you do when you sort of react to the second balls? And the four of them that stood around Fellaini reacted very poorly.
But again, even on that, right, we're talking about Fordham all going to try challenge on one ball. Going back to your point, right, if you leave that, if that goes and you're saying, right, Sacco and Torre are going to challenge that, right, logically you're saying, well, there's two fellas there. I don't understand why Lucas sort of moved 5 yards. As Rooney started to pull away from him, Lucas got dragged into the ball. So had he gone with Rooney, Rooney wouldn't have had the space as the ball came back off the post.
It's just gambling. And Lallana did it against Arsenal, where he was on the post and he gambled. He went and he followed Giroud out. His job is to be on the post.
Yeah.
There's any amount of things that can happen in that situation. Arsenal win the merit. Saka gets up and hit and gets a good head on it and it's goal bound. He's left his post. Any amount of things can happen. His job is to do, if they want to follow Giroud or whoever, somebody else do it.
Yep.
And I think that's what Klopp said after the game. He's like, I can't stand here every week and talk to you about set pieces. We've got to fucking sort it out. Like, you know, we've got to fix it. And for me, I think he's marking zonally rather than man to man. But it's still
it's half and half.
It's a bit half and half. Yeah. I think he has zonal across zonal, the 6 yard and then it's on half block and half. Us, right? Mm. But you know, people always say if it's zonal, you can't see who's responsible. But you can. And Lucas left his zone. That's the reality. You know, or either Lucas left his zone or Rooney changed zones and someone didn't pick him up. I mean, the fullbacks were both way too far out from the goal. But it's just an attitude thing. It's aggression. It's about going. Like, Stoke don't concede that goal.
Right, so
United don't concede that goal, you know?
I want to ask you about
even
that.
Even Chelsea don't concede that goal.
I said it to the lads today, and Andy said, this is your favourite thing, isn't it? But I have this belief that we have too many reactive players in the team. And we've got too few proactive players in the team. And most of the good teams have more proactive players than reactive players. And when you see what happens, like that on set pieces, that they are they aren't reading that danger's going to happen and moving into the right spaces at the right time. And like there's Skirtle is a very reactive defender. He's not a proactive defender in a way. He wants to drop deep and see what happens before he goes and does anything with it. Whereas Sakho and Toure, you can see, and even Lovren, want to go and make something happen as opposed to waiting for it to happen.
I still think they're all a little passive though.
I don't disagree with that.
You know, we don't have, particularly through the spine of the team, goalkeeper, centre half, midfield, striker. We don't have bastards. And that's what you need in there. You need a line of bastards, people who are just going to not let, you know, you need Suarez.
Yeah.
You know, you need Gerrard, you need Herpia, you need, you know, you need this spine of a team that says, oh, Mascherano, you know, this, I'm not going to lose my individual battles.
But even down to the goalkeeper.
I think that's a big thing in football now. Is like there's very little bastards around. Yeah. Like they're all South American. Yeah. Now, there's no men in football anymore. Like even Sean now, who you'd see as your up and coming midfielder in that side where he's got everything. He hasn't got a nasty.
Hasn't got an edge.
I want to see a 20-year-old midfielder smash a few players up to put a stamp. You know, a couple of red cards. Mascherano did it at the start. Yeah. Gerrard did it at the start.
But you can say the same about the goalkeeper. Because if you look at, remember Reina used to get into fucking scraps and everything on the pitch.
Yeah.
Right, he never let anything go. When he was when he came to the club before.
Me, in particular, he's the nicest guy.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure he's saying to people, yeah, up there and win that. I won't even jump.
But I won't jump. I mean, you know, Mignolet is not necessarily a worse goalkeeper than the Dortmund goalkeeper, but the attitude is just completely different. Is it Weidenfeller? Is that his name?
No, he was Weidenfeller when.
Yeah, you know. So when you look at Klopp on a side, his attitude is a lunatic, but you're just like, there's no one on the pitch apart from potentially Firmino. I would say has a little bit of something about him. None of them have. Or Moreno does as well. None of them really have Klopp's kind of personality.
Moreno's just a fucking mess at all. Like, you know, he's
I love Moreno. Yeah, he gets so much slag. I think he's amazing.
I think Klein has a streak in him.
But in the spine of that team, what do you need? And I wonder if this kid he signed now, this group, whatever his name is, this kid Krukel. He's going to bring in, I wonder if he's got a little bit of something in him. And if he goes and buys this Matip, maybe he's got a little bit of something in him. And I just think that's what we need. That's what we just need. Conviction. Conviction. People who believe in themselves.
No matter what we have, we'll always want.
That's natural.
It's a valid point, like what you're saying about proactive and reactive players. Like, I mean, I think another word for it is just someone with more clinical, more creative. Like, you know, a most creative player, I suppose, at the moment, fit is Firmino, and he's not even really that creative. Like,
right, look, there's no point labouring on the game because it's fucking, you know, it's frustrating. For me, it's really frustrating as opposed to suicidal, like it was when it was under Rodgers. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's just frustrating that you can do so much right things and just not get the right result and not finish it off and make your own destiny as opposed to what's going on.
I know, I think it's coming. Like, at the Arsenal game, I kind of, you know, it would have been terrible to lose that game. Like, they totally didn't deserve to lose the game, and psychologically, you know, it was good to come back and everything else, and it would have been a great result if we had been able to beat United. Like, 4 points out of six would have been great, but 1 point out of six, it gives you no kind of advantage of having these teams coming to Anfield the second half of the season. We're blowing it already. You know what I mean? We're blowing it, like, because, you know, we could have made it really, really difficult for United and Arsenal and Chelsea, who I'm sure still have belief in, or, you know, City and anyone coming there, to to really like make Anfield a bit of a fortress for him to worry about coming there. And now it's just like,
if we hang in, we get a
set piece and we're laughing. But no, it's really looking up there. The performance against Arsenal and the balance of the play there, Liverpool probably deserved a little bit more out of that United game. I think it's really, really looking up, and there's a bit, you know, on Twitter it doesn't look like it, but the fans there, there's a belief, like, you know, there's something happening around the corner. As long as Klopp gets the full support and we're not seeing the same team of signings as we have done under Rodgers, gets a bit more
control
and trust in the market. When you see links to Long, it's not very
well. That's where we're going to, because like today, obviously, to allay our depression, it was announced that Simon Mignolet has signed a new 5.5-year contract and got a nice wage increase for his outstanding performances in a Liverpool jersey. So Paul, how happy were you when you saw that announcement?
Oh, delighted, yeah.
Yeah?
No, it's just, it's completely bizarre to me, because like, there's kind of two ways you can look at it. That, I don't know, they like him and they're saying he's going to be our first choice, so they're giving him this 5-year deal and a wage increase. And then like, that doesn't make sense to me anyway. Yeah, I don't think he suits us at all, and like I think he's a worse keeper now than when he signed for us. So like, that doesn't make sense to me at all. I wouldn't mind Mignolet as a backup keeper, but like I don't see why you're going to give him like this huge contract just to sit on the bench. Like so, I don't think that's what's happened. I just think, I don't know, Klopp for some reason fancies him, and I don't know, Mignolet is going to be our number one for the next couple of years.
Yeah, I think that's something that we might have to resign ourselves to. You don't give a player a wage increase, a longer contract, you know, and I'm sure throughout the discussions of this contract, Megan, his age, has looked for assurances that he's going to be number one. He's in his prime. Last thing he wants is to find out that Klopp's looking out there for his replacement for the number one jersey in the summer. So I'm sure he's being told, no, we're not in search of a new number one. Okay, we're in search for a new sub goalkeeper. Our current one is absolutely horrific. We want someone to put pressure on your jersey. That's what's happening. Like, you know, you're going to have to deal with that. But if Liverpool go out and buy a recognised number one, a goalkeeper who's getting a game with his current side, he has to have been told that that's not happening. He wouldn't have signed the deal otherwise. So Megas is our goalkeeper now, unless whoever's brought in as backup really improves and puts a hole on that jersey.
Dave?
I mean, look, you can take it at face value, right? And the face value is the Klopp thinks he's good enough and thinks that it, with work and perhaps with a better team in front of him or whatever, that he'll come good, right? And that, and maybe Klopp just thinks, do you know what? I got 3 or 4 other things I need to fix right now. He'll do, you know, whatever. Or you can, you know, read between the lines and say, maybe, you know, maybe actually it's about getting him through this season, you know, getting a better fee for him in the summer or some sort of loyalty, but I don't know, whatever it is, you know. But it's done now. You know, he's here. I'd be surprised if we didn't look for a goalkeeper in the summer, irrespective of what we've said to Mignolet. But Klopp has been really vocal in defending him. So I tend to take it on face value, which is the Klopp rates him. Klopp thinks that he does a lot of the stuff I want him to do, and I can teach him the rest. So
I'm horrified by it.
We just have to take it, you know.
I'm genuinely horrified by it. Like, the idea of him being still number one in 2 years' time is just, it's like, it was enough to just make me not want to watch football again earlier on, because I just can't deal with him anymore. I look at him and I just see abjectness. I just see a fella who just will never inspire confidence in the defence in front of him. I just see a bloke who will have occasional runs of form but still never achieve a level that you'd want from a goalkeeper that's going to get you top four. And we've, for his whole time that's been here, we've had the same conversations about him over and over again about his weaknesses, and he's never shown any signs of improvement. And listen, it's not just him. If a goalkeeper isn't improving and you've had the same problems with goalkeepers for a few years, then you've also got a coaching thing, and how Achterberg is still there is beyond me as well, because, you know,
well, maybe that's the change you'll make. Do you know what I mean? Maybe it's like he sees enough of the raw material in Mignolet, and in the summer he makes some coaching changes. But, you know, Mignolet gets and look, we watch a lot of Liverpool games and we pull apart his performance in kind of microcosms. But I mean, you know, okay, take Courtois, Hart and De Gea out of it. He's probably as consistent, inconsistent as anyone else. You know, people talk about Lloris as if he's like, he's as good as Lloris.
I genuinely reckon, in my mind, Mignolet is a bottom half of the table goalkeeper. And when I started looking at the goalkeepers today, I was struggling to find ones as bad as him. Because he can't kick a ball, he can't throw a ball, he doesn't come for crosses, he's a poor distributor, he doesn't seem to be vocal, and he doesn't command his area. Like, he is just weak in so many parts of his game. And we're reliant on this, that he's a brilliant shot stopper. And that's now starting to fade as well. And you're there going, well, what's left? This, like, we're looking at a degeneration that's worse than when Reina was at the club. So I'm just that's why I'm horrified by the 5.5 year deal. They could have given him, if they wanted to protect his value, they could have given him a 3-year extension. You know what I mean? In terms of what was there.
And what was left on the deal?
Was there 2 years left on his deal?
So what's your theory? It is a 3-year extension then, isn't it?
What's your theory on it?
What's my theory?
It is a 3-year extension then.
No, I just meant in a year.
Yeah, but like, in terms of, like, if you're talking about protecting his value, like, it's just way over the top. Like, there's just so much scope for this being another fucking Enrique or Barini, where, like, he's just a shit that won't flush. Like, in 2 years, if you're trying to get rid of him, like, who's going to take him? Like, who's gonna buy him and pay him as much as we are? Yeah. He's going to laugh his tits off and go, fuck you, I'll sit on the bench and I'll take me 90 grand a week.
As a sub keeper,
I think you'd offload him. He's not like, he's 10 million. Like, you know, that's all.
I don't see anyone paying 10 million for him. Over the top from as it was.
I don't think we want to sell him. I think Klopp thinks I think I do too,
but I'm just sort of,
yeah, I know what you
if
mean.
If he kind of declines any further,
my theory on it is the only glimmer of hope I'm holding on to is that he plans to bring in a 20, 21, 22 year old goalkeeper in the summer.
Maybe, yeah.
And instead of throwing him in and saying, you're the Liverpool number one, he plans to bring him in, either use him in the Europa, use him in the League Cup games.
Like, people argue tonight they should have done with De Gea.
Yeah.
You know, instead of bringing him in straight away as number one, you bring him through. Well, maybe that's what he's going to do. Or he's going to change the coaching staff. Or
I think he has to do both, to be honest with you. Like, if that's the case, and then you're relying on the young.
What were the Dortmund keepers like during his time there? Because I never got the sense that Dortmund ever had the best goalkeeper, or even the second or third best goalkeeper in the league. When we were talking about like German goalkeepers, you never mentioned the Dortmund keeper. It was always,
that's because he was 25.
No. But the guy
Roman Bürki only went in this year after Klopp had left.
Right,
Weidenfeller was the captain of the side.
So he was the goalkeeper all the way during Klopp's.
Yeah, and they had Mitchell.
What was he like when Klopp arrived? I'm not trying to argue the Mignolet is.
No, he was always
trying to draw a parallel.
He was always like one of the top 5-6 German goalkeepers in terms of what he was. He was in the German squad, and then there was a racism row and he was left over for years, but was in the last World Cup squad that won it. He was back up to Neuer.
So maybe Klopp just doesn't rate goalkeepers. Maybe he just doesn't think it's that important in his sight. And, you know, who knows? We'll find out in the summer.
Weidenfeller was huge for him at Dortmund. Like, he used to keep them in games. Very similar to the way we leave ourselves open. But he was a type who won points with him. You know what I mean? He used to make big saves at big points in the game. And I'm sure he's looking at it saying, like, I'd be frankly amazed if Klopp isn't looking at it and saying, you know, if I had a better goalkeeper here, some of these 1-0 defeats that we're having would be nil all draws at worst. Yeah.
But it would be a big risk to say, go and buy Karius or Horn or one of those and bring him and drop him straight in as Liverpool's new number one. So maybe he is going to go out and go, as you say, get a 20, 21 year old, you know, that he likes the look of. Because both of those keepers have been mentioned that Klopp likes. And he's like, okay, maybe I get another year and a Mignolet. Maybe the year after then, this kid goes in as number one, Mignolet stays as backup. So you've got to give him a contract then to keep him, you know? So who knows? We'll find out in the summer. Yeah. I don't think it's our biggest problem.
Okay, so look, you know, and we have to talk about transfers, because let's be honest about it, you know, the squad is in bits. So do we think we're going to spend much money, Andy?
Not looking like it, you know. We're 3/4 of the way through January anyway, and there's not really been huge. Like, I only really expected a signing.
Yeah.
And they've got Calder on loan, and they signed your man that's staying out where he is. And then there's talk of, you know, nailing down a signing for that Matip fella. So I don't really expect much more than that. We have a serious crisis up top, but is Klopp going to be the type of manager who goes out and just panic buys? He has a serious problem on his hand come January if he panic buys, because come the start of next season, you have a fit Benteke, you have a fit Origi, you have a fit Ings, you have a fit Sturridge maybe. You know, so you can't accommodate all them strikers. They're all strikers that are going to want game time. Mm-hmm. At the start of this season, we probably had too many on the look of it. Benteke, Sturridge, Ings, Origi. Like, you were kind of thinking one of them's going to go on loan. Mm-hmm. So to buy a fifth one, and like if it's Shane Long or whatever, we're going to be looking to offload Shane Long in the summer.
Mm.
Because if Sturridge has a future at Liverpool, which I'm sure he kind of does for another while, for the foreseeable future anyway, someone has to go. Two of them have to go.
Mm.
You only really cannot, like, if you're playing one striker up top, you can only really kind of keep three happy.
Do you think, Max, do you think that they actually might feel that they've gotten to the bottom of the Sturridge injuries and they're saying, do you know what, right? He's only 2 or 3 weeks away because of this mini pre-season. There's no point in assigning a striker because we're going to have him back.
I think it depends on him and Origi, though. I think, I don't think he'd necessarily go out and buy a striker, but I think he'd buy a forward player if he can't get Markovic back. So we're linked to this Inaki Williams guy from, is it Bilbao?
Yeah.
You know, who can play across the front three. And I think, you know, that's the type of player we'll probably go, and if we buy anyone, we'll go and look for. But I think he's genuine, Klopp, when he says that he wants to give these players the season.
Mm.
That he doesn't want to go and just sign loads of players, you know. Mm. So I think a little bit like Andy said at the very top of the show, which is, you know, kind of prepared to take this season, you know, evaluate everyone, and then make some decisions. I think he's made a decision on Benteke. So if I don't think Benteke will go in January, but I'm pretty sure he'll go in the summer.
Yeah.
Mm. And then if Sturridge doesn't get fit, I think it wouldn't surprise me to see him either drop down the pecking order, which he won't like, or be moved on. And I think there will be then some changes in the summer, particularly in terms of outgoings.
Mm.
But I don't see him going and spending a lot now. You know, I think he had the option to, you know, I think there's money there, that's what we hear, but
I actually don't think there's a desire in the club to spend money in January. And I'm not, this isn't a criticism of the owners. I just think that they, for whatever reason, they genuinely believe there's no value to be had in the January transfer window.
Yeah.
And I think as well, our financial year is what, May to May? So if you go and spend a lot of money in summertime, if you then go and spend more money in January, you're putting, you know,
They spent 12 million getting rid of Rodgers and his staff, right? Yep. They've doubled, or paying Klopp more than what they were paying Rodgers. And Klopp's big selling point is that he'll get better results at the same group of players. So I totally get why all of them, and I don't think Klopp is resisting this, I can totally get why all of them are going, let's see what he does with the season.
Right? If the last two games had gone a lot better, I'd probably say, you know, we could probably kind of buy a good player in January, a good attacker, and to make up for the injuries and stuff and go for it here. But I wouldn't be in any rush to now. No. Like we're not getting anywhere near top four after the last two
results. And you don't want to panic by either. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Shane Long on loan, okay. But Shane Long for $8 million
like Iñaki Williams, like if you think he's going to do you now for 8 years, or like until Barca and Real come and take him off you, then go and buy him for, what is it, $18 million or something he's supposed to be available for. But like I wouldn't be in any rush to go out and try and improve the squad in January now.
There isn't
the way the last few games
value
have gone.
In January, I'm sure like you get loads of people listening to this that will start giving us loads of examples like Sturridge and Coutinho, but normally what you end up with is a player that is not getting into their team.
Mm-hmm.
So you're taking a bit of a gamble. Why isn't he getting into his team? Into this team? Why should we buy a player that's not getting into another team's team? Especially like, you know, you're not going to get a player off a team that's doing really well. They're not going to be prepared to sell their players if they're putting a push on for winning the title. So you're going to be buying a player who's not getting into a poor enough side in January. That's what you're getting. So how many, that's a very small pool of players.
Yep.
And it's very unlikely you're going to find your top target within that pool.
Mm-hmm.
You'd want to be very lucky.
Mm-hmm.
So in January, you're going around, you might find it a bit of a bargain. And I just can't see somebody who's maybe chasing for a league. You can't even get a fella who's playing in Slovakian league or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
Is it the Slovakian league?
Serbian
league. Can't even get him.
Because they're going for the championship.
Wants to win the league.
Yep.
So how about that? I mean, come to Liverpool and
have a laugh for a few months.
Really happening here. The summer is when we're going to get players that have done their business for the year. You know, they've stayed with their club. They remain.
I want to play for club.
And you bring them in full pre-season. January, unless you need to get lucky to get a player like that.
I think if you're a Champions League club,
you can go and sign players in easier in the January transfer window. Or if you look like you're going to be a Champions League club, you become attractive to players.
I also think in the January transfer window, more so in the summer window, you're essentially buying players that are from lesser clubs, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Or players from better clubs who aren't playing. So you're taking a gamble either way. Whereas in the summer, you can tend to do more par business, if you like, you know, business with clubs on your level or even business with clubs at a higher level because you're offering more wages. But in January, who's going to move in a Euro year in January? It's either a player that's not getting game time or a player that sees Liverpool as a massive step up. And we got too many of those players as it is.
So that's pretty much what I was saying when you were on your phone there.
Yeah. Almost word for word.
So that's a no to Shane Long, though.
That was me. That was me agreeing with him.
It was a big no to Shane Long. I mean, I kind of liked Shane Long a few years ago, but a striker that maybe scores one in every four games or three games or whatever, that's not what we need at the moment.
And like Origi's back in a while.
Yeah. Origi's going to be back to do exactly what Shane Long kind of does.
Okay.
I mean, to be honest with you, with Shane Long, I think a striker scores one in four isn't what we need at the moment, and it'd
be an improvement.
Would be back in.
Right, look, we won't labour because I think we love doing the previews, but there's probably about 50 matches coming up before we do the next pod. So, Exeter the weekend, isn't it?
Exeter on Wednesday.
Exeter on Wednesday.
We've got Norwich away on Saturday.
Norwich away.
Then we probably have Stoke, do we?
And then Stoke.
And then we have
Everton.
Leicester away.
Okay, so look, the Exeter game. Do we all hope to see the lads that nobody knows who they are?
Yeah.
Oh, atrocious team.
Get the lads that played that game. They all deserve a game again, except for Benteke. Maybe play Ojo or something instead.
What about Bogdan?
Mignolet.
Play Mignolet. Hopefully, he gets injured.
Bogdan, you can't play Ward. Even sure you can't.
No, he wasn't registered for the first leg. He can play, and then if we get through, he can play. But he can't play in this game.
Mignolet is going to play in the final. You know.
Well, I think the FA Cup. I think Ward will get a run, assuming that we can beat Exeter. I would play Mignolet in that game, to be honest with you.
Yeah,
because his confidence is diabolical. So it's you may as well.
And there's no point in Bogdan. There's just no point in him whatsoever.
I think he's formed him out completely. Yeah, so there's no way Bogdan.
He put your man Ward straight in.
I think Enrique has a better chance of playing in goal.
I agree. I think you have a better chance of playing.
Enrique's played his last game for Liverpool, so. Colgar, can he come in even?
No, Colgar wasn't
interested either. What can you, Touré and
Ilori.
Lovren is back, isn't he, for Exeter? Oh, Lovren will be back for Norwich, so I think that he could play Touré probably.
And Ilori.
And Ilori in this game. He might play Lucas at the back.
That's the 90, would he?
Two kids at the fullback.
You play Lucas maybe, because Lucas probably won't play in the Norwich game. I hope he plays pretty much exactly the same. Sorry, for a couple of reasons. One, I think they did okay, and the more they play together, the better they'll get. And
Sinclair probably won't play.
We have to beat Norwich, so
on a pitch like Anfield, compared to what they played on, play like the likes of Hex. Like he much prefer that. Prefer that. I need the players of a little bit of ability on the ball. We prefer to.
Plus, we won't concede directly from a corner, hopefully, so we'll have a good
game. I'd like to see Ojo get the full 90.
Yeah, he was good when he came on. I'm surprised he hasn't made the match.
He deserves
it. And Kent was very impressive as well. And it's great seeing these lads that we have in the breeze who they are. I
can't remember the exit match. Chiravella.
I was hoping.
He only came on, didn't he?
Yeah.
He could start instead of the other guy who played in the middle of the park. That's Stewart. Yeah, he's not even a right back. He's a right back, and he's 23 or 4 or something.
Yeah.
What are we doing?
Another Teixeira. He's having a testimonial next year.
I don't know what the crack with Rosner is.
I thought he
got another hamstring injury, didn't he, though?
Did he?
I think he's finished, isn't he?
Actually, he's out of contract. Played. And they haven't agreed a contract with him.
Flanagan played half in the under 21, so he might get a game, actually. Flanagan.
Is he alive?
Yeah, he played in the under 21s last week.
Really?
Only 4 days.
Yeah, 40.
He was on Enrique's shoulders.
No picks. It didn't happen.
He was mad looking at Flano just playing in a field.
That's your future.
That's your future. There's no one there. No linesmen are at even.
Two owl lads just holding a flag. Yeah, it's gonna help. Right. So Exeter, Norwich. Do we beat Norwich?
Norwich are on a horrific run of form.
So that's an out.
So we'll probably draw.
And then Stoke, do we get to the final?
Yeah.
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 And then lose to Everton in the final.
Actually, we can talk about that next week. That'll be beautiful.
No, Everton are going to get turned over against City.
All right, lose to City in the final. Yeah.
If we get to the final, we'd beat Everton. There's no way an Everton team doesn't bottle it against us.
If it's Everton.
No way.
But I think it'd be City.
Yeah.
I think we'll beat Stoke, I mean, 1-0 back at Anfield. They've got to come and play. Should suit this, really.
Yeah. Right. Okay, so that's... We win everything.
Win everything. Who cares about the league, anyway? It's all about the League Cup.
It's all about the League Cup.
Fuck the FA Cup as well. I can't stand that competition anymore. Shitey jocks matches like away against Exeter. Fuck off.
I hate the fucking... what's the word? The reverence it's given. Like,
well, the magic of the cup.
Yeah, people were complaining about Klopp putting out that team. It's like, fuck off.
It's the oldest club competition in the world.
Hello, this is Ronnie Whelan here, and you're listening to Tripper Chats. Unbelievable stuff. You ask me anything about Liverpool FC, I will answer it immediately. I'm an encyclopedia. As you know, I played for Liverpool in the 1980s, won many trophies, played with the likes of Kenny Dalglish, Graham Souness. What a team we were. We were just unbelievable. Anyway, Tripper Chats.
Right, what would you do if you found out you were living in the Matrix?
Well, you believe we're living in the Matrix, don't you? Sort of.
There is, yeah.
You do. No, there is. You believe it, like.
Well, do you know what? Yeah. Actually, I don't know how often I felt like I'm the only real person.
Would it be every Monday in here?
No, like, do you ever know? Like, you might be just walking down the road, and somebody just looks at you for too long. It's like they're saying, "That's the real person. There he is."
Like the Truman Show, like.
Yeah, exactly. A real life Truman Show, like. It's just too weird sometimes.
It is too weird.
Like I normally only feel like that after a wank.
I just stare.
What if everybody's watching?
I don't stare at strangers ever. Why are so many fucking strangers? Like, you catch your eye for too long. Like, and you look back to see you. Still looking. And still staring at you.
Maybe you fancy. Or maybe you want
even
to beat the head
off.
Even
in your car and like you're surrounding traffic and there's people looking into your car. Like, it's fucking weird.
I
can't get that feeling that I'm the only real person, or else like everybody, I don't know.
I hate repeats.
He's on to us.
Sometimes, have you ever like come across where you go, I seen that person about 5 minutes ago somewhere else?
No.
Like they walk past and they reappeared again.
Like deja vu.
No, they reappeared again. It's like the same person, but you're
are they playing a different role though?
I don't know.
A bloke walks past you and then he walks past you again 5 minutes later, but he's in a dress or whatever.
No, just like they reappear, even though like you're in a different part of the town.
The world just doesn't seem real at times, you know. When you hear of all mad shit happening,
it
just
doesn't seem like that. It doesn't seem fucking I tell you.
But like, when you see like, you know, when a leaked video on whatever you call it, live leak. And like just mad shit happening, like chopping heads off and fucking people getting stoned and fuck, like that's like that can't be happening. I don't accept it. Like, that just cannot be happening. It's fucking mad. Like to think that somewhere in the world right now that weird shit's happening.
Yeah, I'd say
these are the human beings. Like
I buy into the idea that this could all just be one great simulation on a fucking supercomputer.
You mean the Matrix?
No, not necessarily the Matrix, because the Matrix was like there was all shit going on and we were being harvested and stuff like that, right? But if it's just a simulation, so say we do at the moment, we play games and they set up simulations to see how the universe expanded and the whole lot, right?
Yeah.
Who's to say that within that simulation, if once they've set up all the variables that's going on, right, that the things that in there that exist aren't self-aware of their own existence? And if that's the case,
but isn't the fact that you can think about it evidence of self-awareness, that you're sentient, you can think about that? If you can imagine a situation where you are a program in a computer game, doesn't that prove that you're not?
No. How does it prove that that it isn't?
So you're an artificial intelligence program then?
Quite possibly, yeah.
That explains a lot.
No, but and there's actually there's scientists who have bought into this. They're saying that's why the
But they're computer programs as well.
Exactly.
So maybe there's a lot of stuff to back it up. Like, you know, just like during it last week, right? I seen a person for the first time in life. Like I knew it was. Like it just they caught me eye because they're wearing You know that really old Liverpool jacket?
Yeah.
It was over Christmas. You know, with the tree, like what Kenny would have worn. Yeah. Actually, maybe it was after Kenny. Roy Evans would have worn with tree stretched on the back. And there was a lady, and I seen her in Dundrum Shopping Centre.
Mm.
Right? And 2 days later, I'm in town, and I see the exact same person. I'm going 35, nearly 35, and I'd never seen that lady before. And within a space of 2 days,
you saw her again.
I see her walking around. How is this world real? How is that? Explain that to me. That's not possible. Just, that lady's 50, 60, probably.
Yep. You would have seen
that jacket, obviously.
100 years.
How many years? Yep. That jacket's out.
Yep.
And I've never seen it. And then
straight away, bang, 2 days, you see her twice. Yeah. I bet you'll see her again.
Yeah. And how many times do you text someone and you go, the fucker's not texting back? And 2 seconds later, they text
you back. Mm. Yep.
There is actually a scientific word for that, which is coincidence, which is what it is.
Stop being contrary with facts.
Yeah, I am contrary with facts.
You are fucking contrary with facts.
Contrary with facts.
But no, I can buy into the simulation thing.
So who's running the simulation?
Who's running it then?
Is it?
I don't fucking know that bit. I don't know.
You bought into it.
Yeah, yeah. So why not?
So you accept that someone else is controlling you then?
No. It's a simulation. So within the simulation, there's parameters that you can't go. You can't go outside the simulation.
You
can't go out. But within inside the simulation, you can do whatever the fuck you want.
It's as viable as the world as it is.
No, it's not.
It is
under the current science, the current physics that we know, it is viable.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is, and I'll send you the link later on that proves it.
I'm sure everyone.
Oh,
well,
there we go.
That.
That's me sold. Now you're gonna send me a link.
It's on the internet.
You would fucking call to early now.
In scientific journals and all, and it's accepted that it could be a possibility.
Accepted that it could be a possibility.
Yeah,
because you can't disprove it.
Fact.
Yeah.
Yeah. But like
it's like saying, well, by that we could all, there could be a god controlling everything.
Well, essentially,
yeah.
If you have somebody running a simulation and you're in a joint computer,
what's the purpose of the simulation?
To see what happens. Yeah.
Yeah. Really. Okay.
Yeah.
You've gone proper mental.
I'm just saying.
One night out with Trev Downey, and you've gone proper mental. Like, you know.
But that was before I went out with Trev.
Oh,
that's all the stuff that you ignore when we're talking.
I suppose meeting Trev would make you think we must be in a computer program. If he's still alive,
he's in my cupboard
definitely
now.
Definitely in a computer program.
He's definitely in my cupboard. That's where he lives.
The world is a bit mad. Like, you know, when you consider in the last, say, whatever, 100 years between a microchip being. When was a microchip event? You know shit like that. You work for.
Let's say it's in the last 100 years anyway, yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely probably 50.
Probably about 50 years ago, yeah.
And like. All of a sudden, we've tiny mobile phones that could do pretty much everything, stuff that you would have needed, like 20, 30 items, big items to do in the past. This world is thousands and thousands or whatever amount of, how many years are humans knocking around? And we've only started to discover this in the last 20, 30 years?
Yeah.
That makes no sense.
Why?
Because what the fuck were they doing for the rest of the week?
Because each discovery builds on another one, doesn't it? So, for example, you can't invent the microchip before you discover electricity. You can't discover electricity before you discover like water pumps to generate the electricity.
But they weren't discovering an awful lot of stuff. But they were just knocking around doing nothing.
Because yeah, it's acceleration.
Yeah,
it's like the momentum of technology.
It's like an order of magnitude bigger. The next invention is like...
Like 10 years ago, there was no iPhone. Right?
Yeah.
And so the pace of technological advancement is slower now than it will ever be in the history of our lives. It will only get faster. We will only improve at a much faster rate.
Unless
the simulation breaks.
No. Unless there's a massive global catastrophe which wipes out all electronic devices and we have to revert back to a prehistoric way of life.
Yeah, but it'll be in books how to build microchips.
Won't the books will be destroyed.
Well, the books will be destroyed. Okay. The humans are right, but the
zombies will be
having
sex.
Hang on a second. Because of the rate of technological advancement.
This is if the computer thing gets a virus.
But now, hang on a second. Because of the rate of technological
advancement.
Listen to me. Because of the rate of technological advancement, books won't exist in 300 years' time.
Okay. Well, there's lots of stuff that we've discovered that won't be on paper form. Mm. That'll be stored on a computer somewhere.
Yep.
I mean, how big? Yeah, so
you'd have to start again to an extent.
I don't know how it could affect every single computer, but if something like that was to happen, they probably wouldn't be able to rediscover how to build an iPhone again because it's all stored in files.
Mm.
But yeah, okay. In the event of a global catastrophe that somehow
in a paperless environment,
electricity in a paperless environment, people. We might have to go back to cave whatever. But there will still be, for example, qualified engineers who survive it, who have the inherent knowledge of how to do things. There will still be electricians. There will still be architects and designers and computer scientists and all this kind of stuff.
But you will have they will be inherently qualified in the use of the technology that was available to them. When you go to an existence where you don't have the same level of technology, those skills won't necessarily be transferable.
No, it's called applied science. If you know about engineering and then you're put into an environment that's slightly different, you apply the learning to a new environment, applied science.
But you don't have the same technology, so your rate of advancement will be slowed down because you'll have to go back and use prehistoric tools. You'll have to go back and
I am agreeing if there is a global catastrophe, the pace of technological advancement will slow down. In fact, I think the natural consequence of the pace of technological advancement is a global catastrophe. That's the reality.
Our way of life now in the last 20 years is far more different than any other stage in history. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, even the way people lived in the 50s was more comparable with how people lived in the 1700s than it is now. I think it's
the pace is much faster.
It's not like it's just moved on really fast gradually. It just seems in the last 20 years, it's just ridiculous. And I just can't see that pace being kept up, because where do we stand in 100 years?
It'll go faster.
Eventually humans will be replaced.
Well, they're being replaced. The logical
result, if technology keeps going, eventually there'll be no need for humans and robots will replace us.
But people have been saying that for 100 years, right? And to a degree it's true. Mm. You know, in the reality is that most of the employment that was there 50 years ago is now done by machines and robots. Mm-hmm. You know, even now you can go to hospitals and have heart surgery by a robot, you know, rather than a doctor. You know, cars 10 years from now, nobody will drive. Everyone will have self-driving cars or a version of self-driving cars. Mm-hmm. And then the natural consequence of that is that there'll be self-flying planes and, you know, self-sailing boats and all this kind of stuff. So all of these things will begin to come. But what it means is that industry always replaces itself. The number of people employed now is higher than the number of people employed in the Industrial Revolution when everyone worked in industry. New industries come on board. It's just different. That there won't be wars like there were, you know, in the last 100 years. So the First World War and the Second World War, that'll never happen again. We'll never have a war.
Well, physical wars, wars are carried out day in, day out with the money men, look at the world.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just done in a different way. People just shafting each other, telling lawyers it's all war.
It's all paper war now, like, you know what I mean? Like, you can conquer a country.
You can conquer a country.
Without setting foot on the land.
A computer,
you know? So
and it's all threats, like, you know, listen, they sort it out or we'll be over. We've got loads of shit going on here.
We've deadly computers. You're fucked.
The US are technically not at war with Iran, but they sanctioned them today now, and basically they could cripple Iran easily and have no issues with it.
Okay, Andy, worst popular phrase, slang, pop culture bullshit being used today.
What?
What is the worst popular phrase or slang or pop culture bullshit being used today?
It's like modern lingo sort of thing?
Can't we have
there's loads of them, like, pretty much everything.
Everything?
Yeah, all of them.
All of them?
Yeah. All them phrases that make no sense.
Boiled piss.
That does me tits in.
Yeah.
Anyone who talks fake Scouse that says, like, boss when you're off in Liverpool.
That does my fucking head in.
But that's not really what the question is, but
Anything fake Scouse.
Just,
like,
boss,
that is.
If you're fake, being a fake Scouse, I go with that. But no, the other thing, though, like, seriously, people need to just stop being assholes.
Just in general,
modern language, modern behaviour, like, you know, techers. That's
another fake Scouse one is your da or your da. You know, it's like, okay, if you're from Liverpool and get away with that, but then all these Liverpool fans, you know, would have a go at each other and go, you know, pictures of Jim Broadbent, he's got your da. I know his name's not Broadbent, but I laugh myself there. Sorry, you'll have to edit that.
No,
but you know, a word like techers gets invented, and all of a sudden, like, there's like shorthand techs. Serious techers and all. Fuck off.
Yeah. Or do you see the new tweets where it's like, it's just saying like some normal stuff, but it's in like, you know, Scottish. It's like, you know, tweet as if a Scottish person is saying it.
No.
It's like this new phenomenon. I don't really get it.
Well, you see a lot of that already where like they might be calling their mother ma and they're saying my ma. So in the same sentences, ma. You know what I mean? Is that what you're talking about?
Like, that sort of stuff.
It's a sentence said in a Scottish accent.
Yeah, like written, and it's complete, like every single word for word, it's all. And but like, it's not saying something funny. It's just so supposed to be funny because it's like written in Scottish.
Yeah. When people say
"da
babe" without the B.
What the fuck is that about?
I fucking hate that.
Fuck off.
I think actually, I agree. Yeah,
that's the worst of them all.
That's the worst of them all.
Yeah. Right, Paul, is Stephen Avery innocent?
I don't know. we were WhatsApping about this. I don't know. I couldn't 100% say he is, but obviously he got stitched up. I reckon, you know, Bobby Dassey.
Mm.
Definitely something shady about him. Mm. He at least helped. If Stephen Avery did it, he was definitely in on it.
Yeah.
And helped. Yeah. Him and the shady dad.
So, my theory, similar to yours, is that Stephen Avery didn't do it, but it was that she was killed either on or near his property, probably by Bobby Dassey and the stepfather, because the car that they were selling was actually Bobby Dassey's, and she'd been on the property a few times before. So, plus they were going hunting, and they were
each other's alibi.
They were each other's alibi. Because when I first watched it, I could never get past the idea that the cops killed her. Like, I was always like, I just can't go there. My theory is that they think Steve Avery did it, and they planted the evidence to make sure they got him. But I think it got out of hand.
Yeah. They tried to stitch him up, and it just got out of hand. They left too many holes. Because, exactly. You know, it's that state. It's not known around for having the highest IQ. So they're pure the cops. They're not the cleverest of cops, but the looks of things either.
Yep.
So yeah, I don't think they killed the girl or anything like that. I don't think it was suicide. No, these things were suggested. I mean, she was definitely murdered, but it wasn't by him. And then they were convinced it was him, and just tried to make sure that he wasn't getting away with it.
Good.
I don't think like it was a thing where, you know, obviously he had them hung by the bollocks for you know, 400 million or something like that, you know, the civil case. I don't think like it was all that bitterness that they had to make sure they got him, but they believed, and I'd say lots of people went down like that.
Is that though an example of pop culture bullshit, the way things like that take off, making a murder and stuff like that?
No, it was entertaining. I thought it was deadly, like.
But it does go mad.
If anyone's like, obviously we fucked the whole thing up for anyone listening now, but if anyone hasn't watched it, I'd recommend you don't bother. I think it was a waste of 10 hours.
Do you reckon?
Yeah.
Did you not figure that out after maybe 4 hours or something and just stop watching it? Like, did you sit there for 10 hours going, this is bollocks, this is. Yeah. This is absolute bollocks. Put on the next episode, love. This is bollocks.
It was people were talking about it too much. You could not watch that.
Mm.
But as someone who's watched it now, if I could give any advice to potential watcher, just read Wiki, find out what happened. You'd be able to get into any conversation about that the show, and it'll save yourself.
Any other recommendations to watch instead?
What, TV shows? No.
Like documentaries?
Yeah.
Well, if you like Making a Murderer, you should watch The Staircase. Which is on YouTube. It's kind of similar to Making a Murderer. The Central Park Five, which is on Netflix, is very good. It's called The Central Park Five. Again, it's like a true crime thing.
Yeah.
And then on podcasts, you can listen to Serial. The first episode, the first series is very good. And then another good one is called Criminal, which is like 25-minute episodes every week about different elements of crime and true crime and stuff like that. So
podcasts are shit, though.
I know. Who listens to podcasts? Yeah.
West of Memphis is very good.
West of Memphis is very good. Yeah, that's very good. Mm. Or just listen to Dan Carlin's Hardcore History on the First World War, which lasts for 12 hours. That's what I'm up with at the moment, because I can't listen to any more Liverpool shit like this shit.
Here's one for Andy. Do zombies shag?
Don't believe in zombies at all.
No. They're sort of the same in the same avenue as the cannibals.
So you're a vegan?
I can't see why zombies would shag.
But aren't zombies and vampires basically the same thing? So and vampires shag in certain literature and that, so I would imagine they would.
You'd imagine zombies would?
Yeah. I mean, vampires drink blood, zombies eat brains, okay, that's a slight distinction, but they're both undead things, right?
Yeah, but aren't zombies?
Yeah, but zombies are just kind of shambling around, aren't they? They don't really know what's going on. Whereas a vampire, he'd probably need the ride, like if he was bored.
That's true.
I'm immortal. Well, I'm fucking sick of doing this vampire. What am I going to do next?
Well, it's like that Twilight film, you know, the book or whatever, where, you know, he falls in, they obviously fall in love. But he is 100 years old and she's 16. How is that okay? Just because he has an age, he's still 100 years old and he's banging a 16-year-old.
So
it's like David Bowie.
It's inappropriate.
Right, we're late here, so no funky music this week. Big shout out to the Astro Park for letting us back into the bunker for the fourth pod of the year. A bit of a different feel to it than it was previously. And also, big thanks to Dale. So get down here, www.astropark.ie. You know the spiel at this stage if you're in Dublin and want to play five-a-side football. Your day trippers tonight the philosophy trippers tonight were Paul Brennan, Dave Thomas, Andy Young, and of course myself, Phil Casey. You'll be happy to know that we're going to have Trev back in some capacity over the next few weeks with a little feature he's going to be running for us. And until then, we'll be back in next week, back to our normal regular recording times on Monday. We've got a new feature coming up, Twitter's Chats, where we'll be we're going to be commenting on some of the absolute madness that goes on Twitter on a weekly basis. So I hope you enjoy that, just to freshen things up, and we'll have a few other things to throw into the mix as well as we go along over the next few months, and see where that takes us. So anyway, listen, thanks for listening, and we're back, and we'll see you all next week. Good night, God bless. Like, literally, you can pass the ball to, as you said, in 20 yards of space, nobody around him, right? And within 5 seconds, he's on his face. And he doesn't fall backwards, he falls forwards. Have you ever noticed that? It's like he's off balance continuously.
Because of his chin. His JCB fucking chin just digging into the ground.
Just sets him off balance, and literally, as soon as he moves forward, he just falls over. I'd say when he's walking around the supermarket, he has to wear a crash helmet.
He has a weight on his back. He does keep him upright.
That's the reason why he was good in pre-season. You know how those vests on with the heart monitors? It was offsetting the weight of his forehead.
There's a dumbbell on the back of his.
He was wearing those weighted vests, but he took the weight out of the front. Bring the fucking thing back.
Get over it.
It is the same old show you all over again. Fucking Shane Long and all this business.
Do you not think we look better? Well, anyway, we'll talk about it.
Okay. We do look better, yeah.
At least we got a fucking
Gimp
plan.
Mistakes at the back,
right,
as well, though.
Gimp mistakes and we can't finish. We should have been 3-0 up yesterday before they even fucking got near us.
Right then.
You were at it, were you? No.
You're at the Arsenal, were you?
Yeah, Steve was.
Oh, you were at the Arsenal game, sorry. Yeah. Steve was yesterday.
The podcast Nostradamus.
So imagine he finishes up at 6. I fucking told you, didn't I? 6 goals.